Thank you for standing by, and welcome to today's conference. All participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session. In order to ask your question, you may press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn the call over to your host, Mr. Sean Wilson. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Catherine, and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our monthly technical assistance conference call, and thank you for your attendance this afternoon. We have with us today Kelly Canestrary, Karen Barron, Karen Vendetti, and Cheryl Massalunas from the Collaborative, as well as Dr. Mary Smith from DMH. There is one brief announcement to be made prior to this afternoon's call, so I will turn the call over briefly to Dr. Smith.
Okay. Thanks, Sean. Hi, everyone. Just thought I would take this opportunity to let you know that we've created a new web page on the DHS DMH website that focuses on DMH performance measures, and many of the measures are based on data that providers submit. So if you're interested in taking a look, just go to the website, look at About DHS, go to Mental Health, and then over on the right-hand side, you'll see a link titled DMH Performance Measures Reporting Project. Thanks, Sean. That's it for me.
Sure. Catherine, we're now ready to open the line to questions, and if you would, please let us know when there are no more questions in the queue.
And once again, if you do have a question at this time, you may press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. You will be announced prior to asking your question. If you would like to have your question withdrawn, you may press star 2. Once again, to ask your question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. One moment for the first question. The first question is coming from Doug Hotchkiss. Your line is open.
Yeah, I have a question about the suspension of UM, because I'm trying to figure out how to program, you know, the fact that this is off now and then may come back before the fiscal year is up. And I wanted to just confirm, because I've seen wording going either way on this. Are we talking that the suspension is in effect by date of service or by date of the submission of billing to the Collaborative?
Doug, it's Mary Smith. The UM criteria is listed by date of service. And
okay,
so anything processed before close of business April 21st will be processed using the UM criteria that went into effect January 3rd. Anything with a service date of 4/22 forward until the criteria has been reinstated will be processed without an authorization in place. If
okay.
If there is information posted on the DHS DMH website under for providers, Division of Mental Health, and then over on the right-hand side, there's a link entitled UM Criteria.
Okay. I also went to a link that was on the letter from Jacqueline Manker, but it was just that it was a little confused. It was a little ambiguous on this. So just to confirm that then, so if a consumer was, say, out of service units on, say, their 40 service units of therapy counseling as of, say, sometime in March, and we were to submit dates of service of early April, those would still be rejected because they didn't have an authorization in place.
That's true. The authorization, the UM criteria applied all the way up until April 21st.
Okay. Even though we're submitting it now during the suspension.
Well, it's been lifted. It's not really suspended, but yeah,
right.
You have to pay attention to the service dates.
Right. That's fine. I just believe me, that's a heck of a lot easier for me to program by service date than submission date anyway.
Yep.
So then, to continue with that same consumer, if we do have dates of service like during this week or last week, those will go through fine even though there's no authorization because the UM's criteria has been suspended for this period.
Well, it's been lifted, but the only thing I can remind folks of is, you know, people still have to meet the medical necessity criteria. So
correct.
Always bear that in mind, even if you're submitting claim for someone who
I put the burden of that on the clinical people.
Well, you know, medical necessity always applies.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. I just want to make sure that I know what I'm at least processing on the computer end. So, and then once the so now taking another example, and if someone had, let's say, 7 hours of out of 10 hours of therapy counseling prior to April 22nd, then they receive 5 hours of counseling between now and when this is when this UM is lifted and goes back down, say the end of this month, for example. None of those 5 hours would count against the. They'd still be at 7 hours once the UM criteria were reestablished.
That's absolutely correct. And again, you know, I would refer you to that link on the website. There are about, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 dot points, and it's entitled IT System Implications for Temporary Changes to DMH UM Process.
Okay.
It actually spells out all of those things, so hopefully that'll answer all of your questions.
Yeah, well, as long as I know it's by date of service rather than date of billing submission, I can program appropriately.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
The next question is coming from Janelle Bowen. Your line is open.
I have several questions. My first one is... On the weekly voucher summary that we receive, I've noticed that, if a client is what I call getting non-Medicaid funding, it may show that, Value Options is paying, $16, for a service, and then the client is supposed to pay the $4 copay. So we've noticed that if you look up the service, as far as the service details through Value Options, it makes it look like the client or the service has been paid by Value Options in full. We're not seeing the copayment. And I just wondered, why the difference.
Kelly, do you need some more specific example?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask for, Janelle. Why don't we take it offline and I can look at the claims individually. Are these separate from the issues that we're already reviewing for you? Are these additional consumers?
Well, we've just noticed it since, and I was going to talk about this problem also, but in the last 5 weeks, we've been having a lot of errors on our weekly remittance report, and we've just noticed that when we have looked up, some of the consumers, it just looks like on Value Options that we've been paid for that service, but on the remittance report, it either said that it, put it into the non-covered column, or it was being rejected out. So, and I was just curious also if there's anything being done about the amount of errors, that are occurring with the clients, because we're having a lot of clients that are being rejected for Illinois IS-2, or it's putting them in the non-covered column.
Okay, yeah, I think this is something that you and I have spoken about outside of these calls. The non-covered denial is something different. Non-covered is different than a claim outright denying. So, and they would have to be looked at on an individual basis. Now, I know that I have several things right now that we're reviewing for you. If there's anything additional to that, then you should send those to me.
Well, I mean, I have sent them.
Then if I have them, then that means that we're reviewing the claim.
I guess my next question is, too, then, I have some issues that, we've had outstanding now for well over 60 days, so how long is it going to be to get some of these resolved? And some of these errors that we're having every week in our remittance report, we've had, some weeks up to 50-some errors, and this just started since the end of March, so I was just trying to figure out what's happened in the last you know, 30 to 45 days that we're having so much problems with clients who have Medicaid eligibility and they're kicking out as if they don't have.
The last information that I received from you is on Friday, which was an updated spreadsheet, which I think we should take this offline instead of taking up the time on the call today. And this way here I can look at the claims individually. If we have it, if you've sent me the information, if we have it here, then it's being reviewed. If you have anything to add to what you've already sent me, then please feel free to send me anything additional.
Okay. I just would like to know, you know, how long it's going to be to get some of it corrected. And then I just have another question also about, I want to clarify on the clients who have a medical spend down, that it is correct that if they are in a period of unmet spend down, then they should be considered to be utilizing the non-Medicaid funding. And I was just, and it seems as if the state has not been able to recognize that. So I just would like to have that clarified, that that is correct, that if you're in an unmet spend down, that you would be utilizing non-Medicaid funding. And if that's not being recognized and the services are being paid as if the client did have Medicaid, if we should just continue to process those services and let them pay out of the Medicaid fund.
Hi, it's Mary from DMH. Your supposition is correct. If a person has not spent enough, then they should be treated as non-Medicaid. You know, I have to tell you, though, we receive our information on eligibility from HFS. And so that's really what the collaborative depends on to accept and submit claims over to HFS for payment. And so once the claim gets over to HFS, it should be processed appropriately. Are you saying that you're seeing it come back on your remittance advice with, you know, are you looking at the Medicaid report through Provider Connect and finding that it paid as Medicaid?
Yes, what we're doing is we're running the, you know, the data set, spreadsheet, and when we categorize the clients as far as whether they're paying for Medicaid or non-Medicaid funding, we're finding that, well, I mean, we have errors basically going both directions, but we do have several clients who are in an unmet spend-down period, and they're being paid as Medicaid. And I've been monitoring them all fiscal year, and I've seen no change in any other status.
Mm-hmm.
I've put those on, you know, my spreadsheet of errors, you know, two value options. But, I mean, our agency has been waiting to process some of these client services, and, I mean, we just can't keep, you know, waiting on, you know, holding these services. I mean, so I just kind of need an answer as far as if we should go ahead and process them and let them pay out of the wrong fund, or rather, you know, if this is going to get resolved.
Hi, this is Karen Vendetti. I'm not sure what Mary's talking about is, you know, there's the collaborative first process is your claim, and we do not have here at the collaborative information about spend down. So we get from HFS that person's in Medicaid at the time because that's how they send us that person. Once we process the claim, and we could be processing them as Medicaid because that's what we have on file, but then it goes to HFS, and HFS will then say, oh, this person's in spend down, and send it back as a non-Medicaid claim. Then we update that here at the collaborative, and there's another report that has the HFS determined, you know, whether it pays Medicaid or not. That report, that's the report you should be looking at to see whether it really did pay as a Medicaid or not.
I do run that report, and I don't have any services for this fiscal year that have any information in that data set.
Okay. I can't speak to that piece. I just worry about the workflow. So if that's another issue that you want someone to look at that you haven't gotten anything in there yet, that needs to go to claims for them to do that. You know, if you're saying that you haven't gotten any information and you've been processing claims all year.
Yeah, I mean, we, I run reports pretty much on a monthly basis, and so far this fiscal year, there's nothing over there in the data set column. Unless you've developed some different report, I mean, I did have, information out there in the prior fiscal year, but I've seen nothing in this fiscal year.
It's Mary. What agency are you with again?
Mental Health Centers of Western Illinois.
Okay. Take a look at that. And Kelly, you have information already from this lady about which one she thinks would be on spend down as part of your previous discussion?
To verify the MCD funds?
Yeah.
Yeah. If that's what you've sent me already in the spreadsheet that I received on Friday, yes.
Okay, I'm just wondering because I just figured I could touch bases with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I would say too, to look at that further and say if you could send in the report that shows the HFS determination and that there is none here for claims that you've had for a period of time and then they were the spend down, that send that along to Kelly too is just another piece of information for us to coordinate and look at.
I mean, I have done that. I mean, I had a teleconference with you and Kelly both at the end of February, so I sent you a...
We didn't talk about that report.
What?
We didn't talk about that report that you're saying that you're not getting any data on at all for a whole fiscal year.
Right, as far as that part. But, I mean, I still have a lot of errors, and they're not, I'm not seeing anything resolved, so...
What we discussed on our conference call has been resolved, to the best of my knowledge. If there's anything additional, we haven't received it, Janelle.
Well, I still have a lot of services on my spreadsheet that, are not resolved.
If you feel they're unresolved, then you should send that information to me.
I have. It's all still on the spreadsheet.
Okay.
So, Kelly, could we just maybe touch bases with this lady and just make sure we've got all of the same spreadsheets?
I can do that.
Okay. I think that'll be helpful. And then the information that Karen Vendetti asked for about the report that you referenced would be good, too. But, it seems to me if you're running the Medicaid status report and you're not seeing anything on there, one, you can't really be sure how the claim is being processed because HFS is really makes that final determination, especially in spend down cases, because again, the collaborative and DMH really just does not have information about a person's spend down status. That's all resident over in HFS.
Okay, but
we spoke about that, Janelle, on April 13th, I believe, you and I did, by email, explaining that when the claim gets to HFS, they make the final determination as to under which fund the claim is going to be processed under.
Right, but what I'm saying back is I'm not getting any feedback, from that. I'm not seeing anything on the data set that we're running that's showing that any of those services
Then that's what you need to do, exactly what Karen Vendetti had suggested. Print the report, run the report, and then send that to me. And
you
then
guys can't run it and
we
see the same information?
Well, we want to make sure, we want to see what report you're running and what data you're getting.
Which report, this is Karen Barron, which report are you running?
I'm running the the data set that shows, I don't know, it's tagged different with Medicaid status, I think, on the end of it.
Are you running a paid claims? Are you running denied claims? Are you running
approved
claims?
Mm-hmm.
So you're running approved claims, and you're saying that, are you saying that these claims are not paying correctly? I guess I'm not sure exactly what
no,
you're saying on this report that you think
at the very end of the report. I don't know when this was. I mean, I added like three columns that are supposed to be reflective of the HFS information.
You
and
added three columns. I'm not sure what you mean by added three columns. The reports come at that they generate with. I mean, the columns don't change from report to report. So
the data set that you could run that doesn't have the HFS columns on it, and then there's a data set that you can run that does have the HFS data sets on them. And what I'm saying is I'm running the one that should include the HFS data set, but there's never any data in there. There's nothing that's ever showing how the claim, you know, is being adjudicated by the fund.
Okay, so I'm going to repeat what I think you're saying. The claims have been processed through the collaborative, but you're looking to find what's being done at the HFS end to show how they are
adjudicating them according to the which type of fund, whether they paid out of Medicaid, the Medicaid fund, or the non-Medicaid fund.
So, Kelly, I'm not sure that you could in any way impact that with I mean, I'm not sure what you could do at your end to make that happen, Kelly.
I think, Karen, I think all we want to do is take a look at the format, perhaps, and then, you know, I think we can take a look and see if Mental Health Centers of Western Illinois, for some reason, isn't showing up as receiving any information back.
Okay. Mary, can I ask that the latest version of that report that was run, if you could forward that, not you, Mary, but the woman who's speaking, if you could forward that to Kelly Canestrari, and Kelly, if you could coordinate with me?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, so I think we can follow up on that for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
The next question is coming from Michelle Hasek. Your line is open.
Just have a couple questions. And first one for Kelly, do you know about how long it takes once we send you an email with eligibility issues like the young lady had before me to get an answer back from you?
We have to reach out to, you know, to our contacts
uh-huh.
at the eligibility. I'm thinking, Karen, a turnaround time has been 30 days.
Is that Karen Barron or Karen Vendetti?
Sorry, Karen Vendetti.
Okay.
Longer than that, are we seeing? I know there's been some staff turnover at HFS where we have to look. We look to them to verify the eligibility information.
Correct.
And so, again, there's an extra step that we have to. We have to, when we receive information from an agency requesting verification on eligibility, we then have to rely and go to an outside source, that source being HFS, to verify all of that. So it's not something that we just can check within our own system. We're taking the extra step to go to them as well.
So approximately 30 days, you're guessing?
I think I'm hoping for 30 days. Karen Vendetti, do you have an estimate? 30 to 50?
You know, I don't, Lisa really, you know, communicates with HFS and you know, DHS if we need to. You know, I could email and find out what her normal, you know, turnaround time has been to give you a sense of that.
Okay, that would be great. And then my only other question is, has there been any more consideration on extending the 90 days for registration?
We have not made that decision.
Okay. Do you think there's a possibility that you guys are going to extend that?
I can't say right now.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is coming from Gong Min Mao. Your line is open.
Yes, I just wanted to follow up with a question Doug mentioned at the beginning. You know, based on my reading of these instructions, I think the date is not actually is not the service date. It's more like a submission date. Because there is a one sentence in this instruction saying that any service authorization request for the UM services that are in the process of, as of April 21st or received after April 21st will be voided and closed. That means after April 21st, there's no way we can do the authorization. Suppose, you know, based on this line, suppose I have a service that's in April and need authorization. Then I cannot seek authorization anymore, and I cannot also, you know, get a April services processed. So based on this, I think the date is not the service date. It's actually the submission date.
Well, Gongmin, it's Mary. It is the service date. I know because I set it up. And so basically that line that you quoted, you know, it just basically means that, well, number one, as we know, you can't backdate an authorization. And so if you sent through an authorization request for, let's say, for April 21st or for April 18th, you know, what we're just trying to tell you is that, you know, we're not going to process any of those authorizations because we would be granting you an authorization more than likely for the time period of April 22nd forward.
Okay.
So, and as we said, since the UM criteria is lifted, there's really no reason to encourage providers to submit service authorization requests for that time period. So, again, you know, this we are talking about service date. If you provided one of the UM authorized services, you know, with the exception of ACT and CST, because that stays the same and is unaffected, but if you are, if you provided one of the services for which UM criteria authorization went into effect January 3rd, prior to April 22nd, it's still processed using the UM criteria. April 22nd forward until the criteria is reinstated is, basically there's no authorization for those services. So, from me, I worked with the collaborative to set it up.
Okay. You know, based on your explanation, so that is the service date. That means anything that's like a pending or unresolved authorization, basically there's no way to fix them.
It doesn't make any sense to ask providers to submit those authorizations, and we know that the authorizations have been lifted.
So the service date, the based on your explanation, you know, that makes sense. If you interpret it this way, that is the service date.
Yep, okay. It definitely is.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question is coming from Diana Zog. Your line is open.
Hi, I was just wondering if there's been any talk yet about any training on the HFS change from reporting from the collaborative to HFS. If there's going to be any more information coming out about that?
Well, I know that our counterparts over at HFS are doing some planning around provider training. And so they will likely be sending a notice out sometime soon with some training dates.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
We have no further questions at this time.
Catherine, we'll wait another few moments to see if any final questions come through the queue.
Certainly. Once again, if you do have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. One moment for the next question. The next question is coming from Linda Brueggemann. Your line is open.
Thank you. I'm looking at the IT system implications for temporary changes to DHS, DMHUM process, and I'm just seeking clarification because it seems like one of the lines in here contradicts what we were told earlier in the call, that as I understood it, from the date of service 422 moving forward until the time the UM requirements are put back in place, any hours used during that time should not be counted toward the authorization limits. And
it's Mary. That's true, Linda.
Okay, because there's a line in here that says, when UM criteria and service threshold limits are reinstated, the count of units that are applied toward the threshold should be resumed from 421.
That's right, because the UM criteria was in effect through 421 close of business. And so if you were at, you know, to use Doug's example, if you were at 7 units, at close of business 421, then when the UM criteria is reinstated, let's say it comes back, you know, and this is just for illustration purposes, May 21st. As of May 21st, you would still be at 7, and then you would still have to submit a service authorization request, you know, anticipating that you would be reaching the threshold soon if the person still had medical necessity for additional units.
Okay, then I guess it's just the wording is a little bit confusing. So if what you're saying is the way it's supposed to be, then I'll just disregard the wording and take the interpretation.
I think
Thank
the
you.
Wording actually reflects what we wanted. Sorry if it's confusing to you.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question is coming from Joseph Valoria. Your line is open.
Hi, I was wondering, or asking about the warrant payment link report on Intelligence Connect. Currently, it's still, for as far as you can see, it still only shows Medicaid claims. And I know a while back, the non-Medicaid claims were removed because there was something wrong with the totals. I was just wondering if there's any updates on that getting resolved.
The collaborative has created an updated report. We're reviewing and hope it'll be posted out there sometime this week.
Okay, thanks.
The next question is coming from Susan Harbaugh. Your line is open.
Hi, Mary, could you repeat the basic announcement you did at the beginning? There's some more data analysis reports or something available through the website?
Oh, sure. One of the things that DMH staff have been working on for a number of years is identifying some performance measures and indicators that are useful for evaluating mental health service systems. And so one of the things that we wanted to do was share more broadly some of the data that's available. And again, this is these reports are generated using data that providers submit or using data from the state hospitals or based on data from the annual consumer perception of surveys that we do every year. And so we've mostly shared information like this in the mental health block grant reports and the implementation reports, but wanted to again, start trying to share the information more broadly so that people can actually see how we're using the data that's being submitted. And so that information is posted on the DHS DMH website under About DHS, and then if you go to Mental Health Division over on the right-hand side, you'll see a link that references Performance Measures Project. And so if you click on that, it'll show you the first report. So we're hoping to post new information at least every 2 weeks. There is a website address for folks if they have comments or questions on the report.
This is on the actual DHS website as opposed to Collaborative or anything like that.
Yep, it's on the DHS DMH website.
Go through this. Thank you.
Okay.
The next question is coming from Dawn Wettstein. Your line is open.
Yeah, my question is regarding, you had talked about the training to bill directly to HFS. If anything prior to that on the web where there's some information, some sketching out of particularly electronic submissions or 837s or anything, you know, that we can just see just even an outline of what might be coming or the where our resource will be. I mean, we don't have in collaborative EDI anymore, so kind of who is it?
Well, were you on the last monthly IT call?
Yeah, and it was encouraging to say that there would be no changes. I mean,
Yeah, I just wanted to know if I wasn't going to test you. I just wanted to know if you heard the more general overview that we gave. There, you know, there's nothing really posted right now, but again, the aim of everything that we've been doing is to try to make sure that we're not asking providers to make a lot of changes. And so if you're using Provider Connect right now, there will be a HFS portal that basically requires the same information that you submit through Provider Connect for claims.
Oh, okay. Well, and I know this is a specific question, but on the issues of 5010, just sort of right around the corner.
Yeah, that's a different question. We're going to have to see what the 5010 changes bring forth, but we'll be working with HFS on that.
Okay. All righty. Thank you.
Sure.
The next question is coming from Susan Schneider. Your line is open.
Hi, I have a question regarding the backdating of RINs. I know that the lady Deb Hopatas, who used to handle that for us, is no longer there. She's retired. And I know that Jay Hidalgo can only go back 3 months. If we need a RIN backdated further due to us just finding out a client had Medicaid and they issued a new RIN, how do we go about doing that?
Karen Vendetti, is the best thing in that particular instance still for this individual to get in touch with eligibility?
Yeah, the process for the provider has not changed. That's true. Jay does not backdate further than 90 days, but we have been given another contact who can do that. So the process has not changed. You would still contact the collaborative and say there's a question of this consumer having duplicate RINs, and we would look at it and work with our contact.
Okay, well, I did that about 3 weeks ago, and the gentleman I talked to said he would get in touch with Jay, and I explained that I needed it further than that. He said, then I don't know who to direct you to, and he would call me back, and I never heard back from him.
I don't know who that was or not, but you could certainly get a hold of Kelly.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. If they tell you there's nothing more that we can do, then always contact me.
Will do. Thanks, Kelly.
You're welcome.
The next question is from Terry Lehman. Your line is open.
Yes. What is the DHS DMH website?
W-W-W.
I go to the collaborative website, but what is this other website that I'm supposed to be going to?
You mean to look at the performance measurement report?
Yes.
It's still www.dhs.state.il.us. And across the top, there are different portals. I think it's consumers, providers, and about DHS. And when you click on one of those portals, it will give you the option to go to different divisions. And so if you clicked on about DHS, you could select divisions as an organizing principle. If you clicked on that, then that would give you a list of divisions under the DHS umbrella where mental health is listed. So we refer to that as the DHS website, but it's also the DMH website.
Okay.
Thank you.
Once again, if you do have a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. One moment for the next question. At this time, we have no further questions.
Wait just another moment for final questions, Catherine.
And we do have a question coming through. One moment. The next question is coming from Gong Mi Mo. Your line is open.
Yes, Dr. Smith, I just want to clarify with you another statement on this IT system implication. There is items that the UM service limits will be tracked up to April 21st. So when you
when you mentioned the UM service limits, you mean the authorization, the number of authorizations, or you talk about the service limit for non-Medicaid clients?
No, it doesn't have anything to do with, well, let me see. Let me look at which, just so I can be clear, which point are you looking at?
Yeah, that's, I think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the 6 points. Because there's a difference. Authorizations, you know, that's only for Medicaid clients, and then we also have a service limit, you know, for eligible and targeted clients.
Yeah, here, Gongmin, because you're right, UM only applies to those individuals who are Medicaid eligible. Everything on this page only refers to those individuals.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Once again, if you do have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. One moment for the next question. At this time, we have no further questions.
All right, Catherine, if there are no more questions in the queue, then that will conclude our TA call for this afternoon. I'd like to remind everybody that we do record the audio from these calls, and the MP3 files will be available for download within 2 or 3 business days. As always, they're located on the Collaborative's website on the Provider Information page under the Provider Resources heading. Just find today's date and click on the file that way. So with that said, Catherine, would you please now disconnect the main line and push these speakers through to post-conference? Thank you.
This will conclude today's conference. All parties may disconnect.